Then, Nate, how does it work? Okay, the name of the presentation itself is an evaluation of Western Academia's approach to the Shia sources regarding the history of the text of the Quran. So I've divided my presentation into three parts. First, I'll give a brief evaluation of the Western scholars' approach to the text of the Quran, the history of the text of the Quran itself. And this is just give you an idea that where my research is situated. And the second part will be about the Western scholars' approach to the history Shia sources regarding the history of the text of the Quran. And in the final part of my presentation, I'll be talking about my own research, which is study of the traditions regarding the Ali ibn Abi Talib's collection of the Quran. Okay, as Professor Takim, sorry, the existence studies regarding the history of the Quran, based on their employment of the sources, may be divided into four categories. The first is studies based on the Muslim and Sunni sources or traditions, studies based on the text of the Quran, studies based on the archaeological data, and studies based on Muslim sources. So my main focus will be this first and the third approach. So I'll skip most of the second and fourth approaches. Studies based on Muslim sources, or mainly Sunni sources. There have been two approaches have been prevailed in the Western academia based on the analysis of Muslim sources. The first one was the scholars who accepted the Muslim version of the events, which means that the Quran was first collected by Abu Bakr, and then later on, and Umar involved in this project, and later on, Uthman has collected the official copy of the Quran. So these scholars have accepted that story, but of course, they had their own reservations. They believe that the Quran itself was influenced by Christianity and Judaism. The second approach, and some scholars disputed the Muslim version of the event, and by arguing that the codification of the Quran took place during Abdul Malik bin Marwan. The main issue here is, this is the old school, so to speak. This is 19th century scholars mostly, and then turn of 20th century. The main issue here is that these approaches have come under severe criticism later on, towards the middle of the 20th century and end of 20th century. This is based on the fact that these Muslim traditions are not historically reliable sources. I'm just going to go through quickly, just because those sources are all oral sources, and they were recorded the third century, they were not recorded, and there is not strong enough methodology to assess their historicity. So that's why then two approaches grow into the criticism against the Muslim sources, and nothing has been done about this issue. Of course, Professor Takim mentioned that there have been rebuttals by Muslim scholars like Fazlur Rahman and some others, but they were limited in the sense that, okay, they found deficiency in those methodologies, like especially by Schacht and Goldzeier, but they did not come up with any alternative methodology. So the main issue has been the methodology to assess the Muslim traditions. So the problem of methodology, and this, Harold Motzke and another scholar, actually, the Scholler, they came up with a methodology called Isnad Kam Metin method. So the main difference between this approach, the previous approach, has been that they thought that the history, the Muslim sources could be reliable historical data. The Muslim sources, what I mean, the traditions. And they have several principles. I'm just going to go through quickly. So the first transmissions or variants are being investigated as a result of transmission process. And second, the variance of isnad mirror at least partially the genuine chain transmissions. And the third, cases in which the textual affinity correlates with the common links. And these are all terminology I'm just going to go through quickly. In short, this method is based on comparative study of variance, isnad, and metin clusters. So they first, the method, what it does is just first creates an isnad map, which means that collecting all the relevant variants and put together a map, and then later, and the first investigates if these link, this chain of transmissions link with each other, and then later on goes and studies the metin itself, the text, and then tries to find a correlation between the two. You'll see in the third part of my study, I'll show you in practice how it works, briefly though, because I don't have much time. And Motzki, interest, this is why I'm emphasizing Motzki, has employed this method on Sunni traditions on the collection of the Quran, and found that these traditions can be traced back to year 124. This is the earliest date scientifically in the Western academia based on traditions. The date comes up is 124. And this is the date of death of Zuhri. It's a famous Sunni reporter. Okay, then the study is based on the text of the Quran. So, because of the, as I just briefly mentioned, because of the influence of Ignaz Goldseyer and Schacht, the Muslim traditions came under strong criticism. That's why scholars decided to ignore them, some scholars in certain section, and they took on literal analysis of the textual analysis of the text of the Quran to find out the history of the text. And most prominent of the scholars, of course, I'm just mentioning the Wansbrough, John Wansbrough, because he came up with these two famous books and systemized this, produced in a very systematic way. So based on his literary analysis of the text of the Quran, he stated that the Quran, the text of the Quran came into existence 200 years after the demise of the Prophet. And then of course some scholars employed the same method, Angelika Neurith, and then she actually supported the Muslim view. But if you go back, the Motzki study, this is 200 years after the demise of the Prophet. But you know, Motzki refuted this study by tracing back to the history of the Quran 125 after Hijrah. So that's why I'm just skipping this. And then studies based on the archaeological data. Okay, the main discussion had been revolving around the Quranic inscriptions engraved on the Dome of Rock in Qubbatul Sahra in Al-Quds. And based on the dating of the inscriptions, Rizvi Fazer dated the history of the Quran back to the 692. But the arguments remained inconclusive due to the problematic nature of the inscriptions, because they are not exact verses of the Quran. They are paraphrased verses of the Quran. That's why this argument did not convince the academia. In 1972, some Quranic manuscripts were discovered in Sana'a, Yemen. I'm sure you're all familiar with that, and there's been lots of discussion, speculation about this, because this the access was only granted a few German scholars, and Preen was one of Jerd Preen was the most prominent of them, and he stayed there for a very long time, photographed all the manuscripts, but he did not produce any serious work about it for 20 years. So this caused speculations, and actually he gave some interviews and speculated that these manuscripts prove the Western academia's approach, like some approach that the Quran is not an authentic book, and that because the best, he speculated that the text that emerged in Yemen, in Sana'a, are different than the present Codex. Okay, and we had to wait until 2010 to get an insight what's going on in these manuscripts. And Behnam Sadeghi, I think in Princeton University, what he did, he published and edited folios of Sana'a manuscripts. And in addition, it's not, you know, the issue is not just these folios, these palimpsests. What he did, they x-rayed these manuscripts, and they found a lower text that had been erased by later on. Probably there were some mistakes or some things. They have a very detailed study of it. And based on their study, well, I'm just going to go through that it is highly probable, they concluded when he wrote it, co-authored the author, but he's the main author, that the Sana'a 1 manuscript was produced no more than 15 years after the death of the Prophet, Prophet Muhammad. So this is the conclusion they reached, and they published another article, I think in 2013 or 12, and that article argued that no, even earlier than that, this, you know, the, not 15 years after, because that is the time, I think, then when Uthman collected the, Caliph Uthman collected the Quran. No, he said no, it might be even possible that in the, when the Prophet was alive, he collected the Quran. But there are speculations, it's not just crystal clear, because this is based on a carbon dating method, and it might give different results in different laboratories, so his arguments were challenged. Deroche, he wrote about, he challenged his findings, and because, well, one of his, he also sent some of these manuscripts in different laboratories, and the result came much earlier than even the life of the Prophet. So there is lots of discussion going on. It's not conclusive. So studies based on the non-Muslim sources, and this is just, again, based on the fact that the Muslim sources are not reliable, and Alfonso Mingana is the leading scholar in this argument, and that's why they used Christian sources. But this argument is not favored in the academia, because it just didn't find much following. Of course, aside from Michael Cook, the Patricia Cronin and Michael Cook, but Michael Cook has changed his views on this approach. Okay, Western scholars, then now this was the brief overview, and part two is Western scholars' view of the Shia Quran. Okay, Western scholars have paid very little attention to the Shia point of view on the history of the collection of the Quran. In their limited works on the Shia faith, the main focus of the Shia groups and the scholars regarding the distortion of Tahrif of the Quran instead. And aside from that, nothing has been done almost on this issue. And then only scholar and the first scholar who worked on this field, as far as I know, I don't know if there might be someone else, but Frederick Shiwali, and in his second edition of the history of the text of the Quran, in Noldeke's work. So what he did is, he went through these three scholars, three works, Ibn Sa'd's Tabaqat, Ibn Nadim's Al-Fihrist, and Al-Suyuti's Al-Itqan. And this quote is too long, I'm just going to skip it. And then he concluded that the first, the unreliability of the Shia sources. Second, the reports are not mentioned in the... So he said that these Shia arguments about the Ali ibn Abi Talib's collection of the Quran is false, is forgery. And his first argument was because he just outrightly rejected the reliability of the Shia sources, because probably he assumed that Shias were heretics. So they, I don't know, this is just speculation, I don't know what it is, but that's what it is, it might be. And the second, the reports are not mentioned in the Sunni traditions. That's what his second argument, that Shiwali believed to be a sound fact of history. He believed it is considered the Sunni tradition sound fact of history. And the third, even Ali himself did not refer to the Codex even after he had become the caliph. So he laid down these three arguments against the Ali ibn Talib's collection of the Quran. So now there are several questions to be addressed. Do these arguments make any sense? Is there enough evidence to support these arguments? And why have later scholars not engaged with the topic? Why have they instead focused on the issue of Tahrif of the Quran? Well, maybe we can answer the first two questions, but the third and fourth questions is just speculation. We don't know. The arguments he posed, well, I'm not going to go one by one, but for example, the argument that he posed that when Ali ibn Abi Talib became a caliph, why didn't he impose his codex? It might be, you know, simple to argue this, that because he had to fight against two rebellions that were in the pretext of defending Osman's right, Osman's taking Osman's, Caliph Osman's revenge. So imagine him just going and imposing his codex over Caliph Osman's codex. Now that would be cause of major issue probably. But okay, let's move on. And issue of the Tahrif needs to be also discussed, because this is taken for granted in the academia that it's there, the Tahrif is there. But you know, this is mostly based on Goldsteyer's work, and he just divided into three main findings. According to Shiites, the Othmanic Codex is not the complete Quran, as Shia references, including the glorification of Ali ibn Abi Talib, have been omitted. In addition, the order of the verses was altered in the Codex. Ali possessed a complete version of the Quran, which was larger than the Uthmanic Codex. This copy has been kept within the family of Ali ibn Abi Talib and finally passed to the 12th Imam, who is in occultation. Until the reappearance of the hidden Imam, Shias have been encouraged to accept the recension of Osman. Okay, let's quickly have a look at these arguments. And then later on, Tistal took on this Goldsteyer's arguments, and he refuted most of them. He said, Shia addition to the Quran examines these alleged Quranic chapters and it traces them to a copy of the Quran published in Bankipur, India in 1912. In his linguistic analysis, Tistel concluded that the alleged chapters were forgeries. So those chapters did not even exist. And Joseph Elias' work entitled The Shia Quran further discussed these claims, and he found that only reliable Shia sources remaining on the subject that Goldsteyer might have used to try to justify his claims is some traditions in Al-Kulaini's Al-Kafi. And Elias points out that two traditions in the book that apparently supports Goldsteyer's allegation, but he argues that the traditions might be interpreted differently. And present scholarship, Todd Lawson's work is there, and then he also points out that these works have not been examined. And Hussein Mudarrisi, and he has a very elaborate review of it. And then, of course, he also believes that the Tahrif did not exist. And then, on the other hand, Emir Muwezzi and then Ethan Kohlberg, they had recently published Sayyari's work. So they argue, no, it exists. But the problem is here, this is taken for granted, but it hasn't been investigated. Nobody went and examined those traditions. And it's just speculations, what the past scholars believed in, and then what the present scholars believe in this subject. No study has been carried out on this issue. How much time do I have?
About 3 minutes.
Okay, this is the part three. This is my research. Okay, the Shias believe that after the demise of the Prophet, it was their first Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib who collected the first complete copy of the Quran. Although Shias have held this view and there are a number of Shia traditions on the subject, there are also a significant number of Sunni traditions on the issue recorded in some of the earliest Sunni hadith collections. And as a result of my research, in total I have located 31 traditions on the issue, and the Shia traditions, as you see, it's recorded in some of the oldest sources, and then Sunni traditions also, you know, Abdul Razak, these are oldest traditions. So what I did, I just first, after compiling these traditions, I divided them according to whom they are attributed to. So traditions attributed to Muhammad al-Baqir, traditions attributed to Ali ibn Abi Talib, traditions attributed to Ja'far al-Sadiq, and traditions attributed to Ibn Sirin. So first one, I'm not going to go into detail, but the first tradition, there are some forgeries in it. A certain person, because I realized in the text analysis, I realized that this is not talking about the collection of the Quran, but it's the complete and definite understanding of the Quran. This is because there's a word jam there, which, you know, in the old times, most referred to true and definite understanding of the Quran. But certain person tampered with the tradition and added Ibn Abi Talib's name to probably, he was a Ghali, an extremist, probably used it, he was very anti-Othman, so probably used this tradition to in his anti-Othmanic campaign. So I'm not going to go into that. Okay. Traditions are attributed to Ali ibn Abi Talib. So this is what Harald Motzkit's method, and I mentioned in the beginning. First, what I did was I, you know, this method works. You prepare an istinad matin, and you identify like common links that, for example, this came down this person and spread from these person to the other individuals and ended up in recorded traditions. So after that, I look at the matin and if there's a correlation, which what it means is that if this it spread out from this one person, so there must be the text, the matin must have these characteristics of that person's. So there should be similarities in these other matins. So if when I find book in Al Haskani and in Ahmed ibn Abdullah ibn Nu'aym and this and that, there must be some similarity. Text should be similar. It's because if they are recording, if they are saying what Al-Sadusi, Ibn Zuhair Al-Sadusi said, reported them, then there must be similarities. So this is the matin, one of the matin. I can't give all the matin here, but in here. So when the Prophet, peace be upon him, died, I swore that I would, this is narrated from Imam Ali, and him died, I swore that I would not take my robe off my back until I collect what is between the cover, Lawhain. Hence, I did not take off my robe until I collected the Quran. The traditions, this based on comparative study of the metin and the text, metin and the isnad, the result is that these traditions can be dated back to 180 at the latest. Okay, traditions attributed to Ja'far al-Sadiq, the isnad map is a bit less dense. This is because I think, well, there are many reasons. I'm not going to go into that. So, and this is, it's Al-Qummi's. I've chosen Al-Qummi's because it's a very detailed version of the tradition. And in a tradition, well, this is more like a political kind of, because in the Sunni traditions, there is tension, like you could see here. And there is like, later on, it's gonna come later on. This is more like it's politically charged, but it might be true, it might be, you know, whatever is we cannot know for sure, but these traditions can be partially traced to Ja'far al-Sadiq's date of death and 148. Because what I say partially, because there are certain, because the isnad chain is not very strong, so it cannot be dated properly, and the mutun, the text, is not very, you know, strong. So that's why, because this is like, we have very long metin, but then other mutuns are very short, so we cannot make a strong comparison. But still, certain elements could be dated, especially the collection of the Quran, like the parts that, you know, he then took to it. You see the first part. Ali did not wear his cloak for anything else apart from prayer until he had written the Quran. But this is there. I mean, this is the common. So we can, for example, date this tradition back to Imam Ja'far. But the rest is we cannot confirm because we don't have any similar text. Okay, the last one is traditions attributed to Ibn Sirin. So this is much widely distributed, and it exists in Suyuti, Haskani, Ibn Abdur, you see, it's much more Ibn Sa'd, Ibn Shayba, and strangely, this gives the earliest date, which is 110. This tradition can be dated back to 110. So if you remember, Harald Motzkit found the date was 125 based on the analysis of this Sunni traditions, but based on the Shia traditions, of mixed actually, not the Shia traditions, but in the chains there are always Shias that exist. So this is, if you can get even an earlier date, which is 110. But what it means is 110, it doesn't mean that it came into existence in 110. It means that it can only be traced back to this date historically. The rest is speculation. You can speculate, but scientifically speaking, this is the date you can come up with. But this also, you know, this refutes those allegations in terms of the history, not about Ali ibn Talib's codex, but the allegations about the history of the text of the Quran, because the scholars like John Wansbrough and the others, many scholars argued that no, Quran came into existence 200 years after the Prophet. So these works refute those arguments. And the conclusion, the study of the variants resulted in the conclusion that with the help of these traditions attributed to the Ibn Sirin, the narrative of Ali ibn Talib's collection of the Quran can be dated back to as early as the first decade of the second century. The finding regarding Imam Ali's collection of the Quran concurs with Motzki's finding that the traditions regarding to Abu Bakr and Uthman, and Umar was also involved in this project, collection of the Quran can be traced back to the Ibn Shihab al-Zuhri's death, 124. Both studies confirmed that the issue of the collection of the Quran was a hotly discussed topic at the turn of the first Islamic century at the latest. The fact that the dissemination of these traditions took place through both Sunni and Shia transmission lines further strengthens the finding as despite their political and to a certain extent religious differences, the two groups agree that a unified format of the Quran existed in such an early period. Thank you very much.